Good afternoon and welcome to Wanda 6, a Black Arts and Culture program with the African Sisters Media Network. Haifa Al-Mansour is the first female filmmaker in Saudi Arabia and is regarded as one of the most significant cinematic figures in the kingdom. She finished her bachelor's degree in literature at the American University in Cairo and completed a master's degree in directing and film studies from the University of Sydney. The success of her three short films, as well as the international acclaim of her award-winning 2005 documentary, Women Without Shadows, influenced a whole new wave of Saudi filmmakers and made the issue of opening cinemas in the kingdom a front-page discussion. Within the kingdom, her work is both praised and vilified for encouraging discussion of topics generally considered taboo, like tolerance, the dangers of orthodoxy, and the need for Saudis to take a critical look at their traditional and restrictive cultures. Through both her films and her work in television and print media, Al-Mansour is famous for penetrating the wall of silence surrounding the sequestered lives of Saudi women and providing a platform for their unheard voices. On Monday, September 16th, had an opportunity to speak with the director via telephone. Her film, Wajda, opened in San Francisco on September 20th and opens in the East Bay and South Bay this Friday, September 27th. Wajda is about a 10-year-old girl living in a suburb of the capital of Saudi Arabia who longs for a bicycle despite the possible repercussions from a society that sees bicycles as dangerous to a girl's virtue. Although she lives in a conservative world, Wajda is fun-loving, entrepreneurial, and always pushing the boundaries of what she can get away with. After a fight with her friend Abdullah, a neighborhood boy she shouldn't be playing with, Wajda sees a beautiful green bicycle for sale. She wants the bicycle desperately so that she can beat Abdullah in a race, but Wajda's mother won't allow it, fearing repercussions from a society that sees bicycles as dangerous to a girl's virtue. So Wajda decides to try and raise the money herself. Wajda has played at film festivals from across the globe, including the 2012 Toronto International Film Festival, 2012 Venice Film Festival, the 2013 Tribeca Film Festival, and the 2013 Los Angeles Film Festival, where it won the Audience Award for Best International Feature. This particular film I found just really heartwarming and just had me sitting on the edge of my seat. Not only does the director, Al-Mansour, sort of challenge social norms with her character in this particular story, but we also get insight into sort of the everyday life of a typical, maybe middle-class Saudi family. And sort of we see the relationship between Wajda's father and mother, themes of polygamy are touched on because Saudi Arabia is a polygamous society. We also, it's also an Islamic society, so, you know, hijab is the dress that the women and the girls wear. We look at other topics that are explored are the issues of child marriages, you know, marrying girls that are, you know, like very young, you know, as young as 10 to older men and to sort of preserve their virtue. We look at the idea of women working outside the home. Also, tribalism is also addressed. One never quite thinks about different ethnic groups when one thinks about the Arabian diaspora, the Arab diaspora. However, there are different ethnic groups. So this particular film touches on quite a bit of all that, and this is a really short interview, but it's what you might call short and sweet. And this particular interview is going to be followed by a rebroadcast of an interview with Tiffany Mann, who is, for all intents and purposes, co-star of one Oh, oh, my goodness, I was just going on, and I don't know where I left off. So I'm going to play this interview with Haifa Al-Mansour, and then we'll shift into the music, Janis Joplin music, and then I'll play the interview with Tiffany Mann, who, as I mentioned already, is really excellent in her role as blues woman in the Bay Area premiere of One Night with Janis Joplin, created, written, and directed by Randy Johnson. Simply marvelous, marvelous journey through American music.
I just wanted to let you know that I just loved your protagonist, Wajda, and her mother, and just the storyline of, you know, this little girl wanting to be able to, you know, ride a bicycle, and all of the different taboos associated with that. That was just, like, unbelievable, but it's not unbelievable.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and then when I was reading that, you are, the first director to come out of your country?
Yeah, I'm the first Saudi female director.
Yeah, wow.
I'm the first one to shoot a film in Saudi, too. So.
Yeah.
And the first film ever to be, like, submitted to the Academy from Saudi Arabia. So there is lots of firsts.
Right, yeah. And how is the film? Is it I don't know if they're, like, theaters, but how is it being received?
Well, there is no other theaters, for sure. And we tried to do some cultural screenings, and we sold tickets, and just to bring, like, what it feels like to go to a movie in Saudi. Still, it's not very far from having, like, all this commercial cinema.
Mm-hmm.
But people are really proud about the nomination in Saudi. They're happy. I think they want to see themselves represented in a film and compete and all that. And the film itself, I think, of course, a lot of people in Saudi, it's a conservative country.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people don't like women talking about women's rights or empowering women. So they're reluctant to embrace something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to make a film that is respectful of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, still, I want to say things about women issues and my life. And it's a social commentary on my culture. But I didn't want it to, but I always put in mind that I want Saudis, when they see it, they enjoy it. They see themselves, and
mm-hmm.
they don't feel offended or exposed.
Right. Yeah, and I think when you write about your own upbringing and your father, and just tell us a little bit about your life, you know, growing up, and I think, did you have a bicycle?
I had a bicycle, but I wasn't allowed to ride it outside the home. I had a green banana seat kind of bicycle.
Mm, I remember those. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in a small town in Saudi Arabia. I'm one of 12 kids, and I have very traditional parents, like typical. In a way, they don't speak English. We're very middle class. We never traveled to Europe when we were kids. We took only regional, like, trips around the Arab world and stuff, but never to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
But but they're very nice, very kind people.
Mm-hmm.
And I never felt like my father never told me you cannot do this because you're a woman, or you cannot do that because of stuff. So I always felt like there's space at home. But once I step outside from home and I go to school or to society in general, I'm confronted with a different reality where I know exactly where I stand from things and what it means to be a woman in Saudi.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the little space my family gave me at home allowed me to dream and to be like and to see things. I can achieve things if I want that little space. And I think a lot of people in my hometown, girls especially, they never, because they are from typically very very traditional families, and at home they were always told that they have to get married and da da da, and that is what is right and what is wrong. So then they never, it was harder, I feel, for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have, like, three short films, and you have a documentary, I guess, 2005, Women Without Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, sort of this particular story, is this sort of another direction for you as a director?
No, I always wanted to to make a feature film.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to make a feature film. You need money, you need expertise, you need skills. And I lacked all of this. I didn't have, like, I always felt like And you know, I'm from Saudi, not even from Egypt or Lebanon, where they have access to film, they can work, they have this culture. I come from zero culture. And you know, so like, not zero culture in Saudi, but zero culture when it comes to film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have never, there's nothing, no sets, no film, movie theaters, no film festivals, nothing. All we get exposed to is the mainstream kind of cinema from the video rental stores. That is all what, that is all film, what film meant. So it was a great challenge, and I wanted to write a story, and I wrote a story, and the Arab world, like a lot, we started applying for funds, and they did not believe in a story like this, because it's not a typical story coming from the Arab world. It is, because it is about everyday life, about the girl who wants a bicycle, it's stuff like that, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes, when you are talking about films coming from the Arab world, it's about rape, about harassment, when it comes to women and stuff like that. That is, didn't have this kind of, there's no sexuality, there's no sexuality embedded on the bicycle stuff, but it wasn't like, so yeah, it was hard to find funding from the Arab world.
Right,
but,
yeah, I really like, as you
But I'm grateful for Rotana Studios. It is a Saudi company. They came with Razor,
mm-hmm.
with Razor Film, and they financed the film. Razor Film, of course, the major,
mm-hmm.
from Berlin, from Germany, and Rotana, our co-producers from the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Yeah, I really like the, you know, the day-to-day aspect of, you know, your, you know, protagonist, you know, being able to go to school with her and to hang out with her little friend who has the bicycle, and he lets her learn how to ride on his bicycle, and then, you know, her beautiful mother. Her mother is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Rima Abdullah, the famous TV star,
mm-hmm.
the mother.
Yeah. How'd you get her?
It was hard to get her because TV is very established and film is nothing, non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost a step down for her, and she didn't want to.
Oh.
We approached her a couple of times.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's really, I felt like she has the warmth for a mother, and
mm-hmm.
she has them. And I tried to cast people like very similar to the story, like like it's almost like a documentary style. So if I feel like they have the spirit of the thing, I would bring them. And everybody in there are very similar to who they are.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, interesting. And tell us about Wad Muhammad, who plays Wajda, the protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
And, tell us about, you know, the cast, the characters and the cast, I should say, you know, Wad Muhammad and then the headmistress. She's very well portrayed, who says that Wajda reminds her of herself when she was younger. And I just love the whole Quranic recitation. And then your little character, Wajda, she is such an entrepreneur. She's, thoughtful and trying to figure out how to save up the money for this bicycle that she just has to have.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, casting was difficult because we have TV and there is some talent pool. So all the adults already made their chat. They made their decision of challenging the society and becoming on the thing,
mm-hmm.
but becoming actresses. But finding Wad Muhammad was difficult because we don't have casting agencies, and we looked around, so we had to and we couldn't find her until later on in the auditioning process. And I wrote the script a little, the character based on my niece, so I was trying to find her spirit. And Wad Muhammad, she came in and she had this free spirit and all that, and her voice was amazing. So we cast her, and I think she inhabited the character very well. And the character added to her, like she thought, like, well, the character is very cool, and she started borrowing him from the character, and that is cool. I felt it gave her room to expand.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and I feel I really enjoyed working with the female actresses. I think because they always thought they worked with male directors,
mm-hmm.
and for me to be able to talk to them, I felt there is intimacy. And they opened up, and I'm very grateful for the space that they allowed me to go in there, especially Reem, like when she went up. It is emotional to break down and to lose a husband and all that. So
mm-hmm.
at the moment, yeah, she gave me a real, real good performance because she really, and I'm very grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And then you sell these different women in the society. You have... you have Wajda's mother, Reem portrays, and she has a friend who works in the hospital. mm-hmm. nearby, and she's telling her, you know, get a job.
Exactly.
Come to the hospital.
She's the ultimate traditional woman. She's not very religious, but religion is part of her life.
Mm-hmm.
But she does, I think, all her decisions is based very much about tradition, what a woman should do or not to do based on tribal practices.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, also, I wanted to put to give everything, not everything, like, to show how women are different. And sometimes women are the gatekeepers, sometimes the women are, and they are not all good or bad. And I didn't want to show men as, like, the villains or the evil. That is why I have Abdullah as a great example. And the father, even if he is distant or even if he is not, like, he's a loving father. He's a father that maybe the social pressure is stand up between him and his wife and the love of his life.
Right.
And it's a sad story, and for me it is very very much to not to give one example and or one dimension kind of stuff. I think every society has shades of people,
mm-hmm.
like different, like, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I noticed that your character, why she says she, you know, she wears sneakers and she's, you know, she's a thinking child. She sort of tries to figure out things, you know, critical thinker. And that scene where there's the family tree, and
mm-hmm.
because she's a girl, she's not on it. I mean, that is such a powerful scene.
Yeah, it's very sad, right?
Mm.
It breaks my heart every time she stands in by the family tree. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to make a film that is, like, shows how women sometimes want to assert themselves, and especially young women like Wadida. She wants to assert herself, and she wants to be heard. But it's very tough in a society that doesn't acknowledge women,
mm-hmm.
and maybe consider them second citizens, second class citizens and stuff. But it is Saudi Arabia changing, and all what we need is girls like Wadida who believe in themselves, who have the confidence to change their life and pursue a dream and never give up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, for me, I wasn't trying to make a film about how hard it is. I'm not, like, neglecting it's very difficult place. Saudi Arabia is an extremely difficult place when it comes to women. But that wasn't my focus. My focus is to bring those characters who will never give up,
mm-hmm.
those characters who are willing to embrace the love of life and change things just to be happier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love the relationship that you share with us with those two characters, the mother and the daughter. I mean, the mother and the daughter, they have a really special relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, singing together as they're preparing food, and when her mother helps her recite Quran from her heart, you know, shows her how to, you know, not just have the words, but how to sing them with passion, and it's just so beautiful.
Oh.
It's so hopeful as well.
Yeah, I think it is, yeah. Mothers are very important in our lives. We shouldn't take them for granted. They give us so much power,
mm-hmm.
even if we don't understand it, but they anchor us sometimes.
Right, yeah. And so you say you come from a family of 12 siblings. Did your father have a second wife, or is
no,
that...
No, no.
Your mother has 12 children?
My father and my mother are very, like, liberal in that way. My father will never take a second wife, and my mother, if any one of my brothers is even thinking about second wife, she'd kick him out of the house. She's a very strong woman. We don't, like, you see, and they grew up in small towns and all
mm-hmm.
that, but they have those values of, like, this, you have to respect women, you cannot do this, you cannot do that, and strong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that is nice, yeah.
Right, right, yeah. And we have like 1 minute, and I just wanted you to talk a little bit about the schools, because, you know, not everyone, this is like my first time ever going to school with a Saudi girl. And so I wanted you to talk a little bit about the school, and was it similar to the school you went to?
Yeah, very similar. I went to public schools in Saudi, in a small town, and I wanted to reconstruct the same world that I lived in once.
Mm-hmm.
So and for me, the schools are where you get your formal education about where you, who you are and identity, especially public schools. You get your identity and what you should do and what you shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Your film is just really beautiful. It's beautifully shot. Did you have someone on the camera, or?
We had Lotz, he's our DOP, he's a German German DOP, director of photography.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. Anyone, any of your technical crew from previous projects or?
Oh, no. No? No, like it's a German and Saudi crew, both mixed.
Yeah. And last question, are you working on anything presently, another film?
Well, I'm trying to have time to write. I've been traveling a lot with this film, so I hope to have some space to write, but I want to work with Razor Film, and I want to work with Rutana.
Excellent.
The mix was really good.
Yeah, well, congratulations on this wonderful film, and looking forward to other work.
In
the meantime, you know, this film, sure, is going to really touch a lot of hearts and do much to open up that particular you know, world for people that haven't a clue.
Well, thank you so much, Wanda. I really appreciate all your support.
Oh, thank you. Congratulations.
Right. Take care.
Bye.
So that was director Haifa Al Mansour. And again, her film, Lajda, opened this Friday, September 27th, at the Albany Twin, Albany Regency Cinema 6 in San Rafael, Aquarius Twin in Palo Alto, Century 16 in Cousin Hill, and Camera 3 in San Jose. And I saw Camera 3 yesterday when I was at the San Jose Repertory Theater right up the street from that wonderful theater, really nice and intimate space, where I was able to see One Night with Janis Joplin, created, written, and directed by Randy Johnson, and starring Tiffany Mann, who played Blues Woman, and she was simply fantastic. Really loved her standout performance, Tell Aretha Franklin, one of Aretha Franklin's songs. Which one is it? I'll tell you in a second. It was right before the end. Had on silver sequin outfit, and then she invited Janis Joplin, who had been in the wings listening, to join us. So we had the queen of soul, the queen of wonderful finality. So I'm going to read you a little bit from the director's notes, and we'll jump right into the interview with Tiffany. Randy Johnson writes, "In these days where fame is instant and true musicianship rare, the word artist is an often misused statement. As we are held hostage to a manufactured pop culture on a daily basis, I feel we must constantly revisit our history and explore the authentic forces that have shaped the landscape of our lives. One of those authentic forces is Janis Joplin. There never has been and never will be another Janis Joplin. Her fame was earned, her following grew as she grew, as people were drawn to her and she was drawn to them. Janis Joplin was a true artist without contrivance or artifice. She was an extraordinary woman. People like to say ahead of her time. I happen to believe she was right on time. After immersing myself in the culture of Janis Joplin, Michael Joplin, Laura Joplin, and Janis herself, the one prevailing message that kept coming back to me was the commonality of past and influence that guide and shape all of us and our spirit every day. I am constantly astonished and inspired by the depth of the wisdom she imparted in her music, her interviews, her writing, and her art. All of us are influenced and shaped by artists, poets, musicians, thinkers, and ordinary people. That's what creates new thoughts every day. Janis provoked a lot of thought by simply being herself. At 3 a.m. one week after I had spent time with the Joplin family, I knew that this play would simply be One Night with Janis Joplin. It's a night with Janis one more time to share her music, truth, influences, art, philosophy, and spirit. Janis lives on as most great artists eventually do, forever in the conscious collective. This isn't just Janis's story. It's all of our stories in one way or another. We all touch and inform each other as we travel this life. I trust that you, the audience, will take away with you a piece of Janis's heart." So we're going to play this interview with Tiffany Mann. And I had a song I was going to play for you, but I don't know if I'm going to have it together in time. So I'm going to play this interview, and we will play it again before the run closes October 6th. Remember, it has been extended, and I'll play it again with some of this wonderful music. but I just have to tell you, it's just a fabulous, fabulous, fabulous play. Very, very well written and very well executed by the fabulous cast. And I'm not certain if I was still connected when I shared the names of the cast. And last night when I attended the play, Carrie Hudson was Janice Joplin, and Tricky Jones and Chenerie Jackson were the Joplinaire or the backup. And then of course Tiffany Mann was the blues singer, and then fabulous live dance, including a horn section. It was just like, oh my goodness, like we're literally dancing in the streets at the end. So, looking forward to having you join us again for another edition of Wanda Six on Friday morning at 8. And in the meantime, enjoy this wonderful interview with Tiffany Mann.
Tiffany Mann, tell me how you came to want to be a part of this production at San Jose Rep.
Well, the show One Night with Janis Joplin, I started my stint with the show at Zach Theater in Austin, Texas, and we ran for about 6 weeks, and the director and the creative team and the production team let us know that there was an opportunity to expand the show to San Jose, and you know that was in the works, and they offered me an opportunity to come here, and you know everything was very smooth, the transition was smooth, and everyone was very nice about it, and and just kind of got us here, and so it was just a very smooth transition from doing the show in Austin and coming into San Jose.
And you're a Texas native?
I am.
Which city?
I am originally from Fort Worth. I was born and raised in Fort Worth, Texas.
Okay. Yeah, and then Janis Joplin is a homegirl too, right?
Yeah, she's from Port Arthur, so that Texas blood is running strong through the show.
Yeah, awesome. Any other Texans in the show?
We have Tricky Jones, who is originally from Galveston and now resides in Austin. Carrie Hudson also resides in Austin, along with Hunter, and there are a few other, let me see, I think that's it. Anytime you start naming names, you always forget someone, and then they call you out on it.
That's quite a few people.
Yeah, quite a few people, and so it's a very, it's been a very special experience in Austin, Texas, with people who grew up around her and grew up around her music, and I'm learning that there's the blood runs thick here in the Bay Area as well with Janis and you know her music and things of that nature.
Yeah, because she lived in San Francisco. I was reading.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about One Night with Janis Joplin, and tell us a little bit about how she was such a trendsetter, even though she died so early.
Absolutely. Well, One Night with Janis Joplin celebrates her music, and it talks a lot about her influences and who influenced her and how the music of the times kind of helped her create the music that she's well known for. And it touches less on, you know, some of the things that she's more well known for, which is her addiction and all that kind of stuff, and really just celebrates who she was in the music industry. And some of her influences include Etta James, Nina Simone, Bessie Smith, Odetta, Aretha Franklin, and those ladies are weaved within the show, and you really get to know who she is through her music and how big of an influence those women were to her.
And you're a blues singer, so you sort of are.
I play the role of the blues singer, and the director was very adamant about making sure that I capture the essence of who these women are rather than an impersonation. And so you get a chance to hear what Janis has to say about these women, how they influenced her, what songs necessarily influenced her, and then you get to see kind of the embodiment of what those women are and who those women are to her come alive on stage. It's very well written.
Oh, it sounds really wonderful. So she's having Are you on stage together?
There are quite a few moments where we are on stage together, but our biggest duet is when I play Aretha Franklin, and we kind of get a chance to play with the audience and you know, have a really, really good time at the end of Act One. We get to sing Spirit in the Dark together. But there's a lot of songs where she sings, or she speaks about the song and how it influenced her, and then I come and sing it, and she sings her version of it. For instance, Summertime from Porgy and Bess, and she speaks about how her mom played musicals on the record player over and over again, and one of the songs that really stuck out to her was Summertime from Porgy and Bess, and I sing it in the original way, the operatic way, and then she sings her version of it, and you get to see how, you know, from that it ties in and so seamlessly goes into her version. It's really beautifully written.
Well, you're a young woman. Did you already know Janis Joplin just because she's a Texan, or did she
Well, actually, it was an experience where I didn't know I knew who Janis Joplin was.
Okay.
I was very familiar with her music and very connected to her as a person. And as I've been doing this show, hearing some of the monologues and how she felt, because Randy Johnson, the writer and director and creator of this piece, used some of her diary entries and her unread entries and writings and things that the family let him view. He actually put those writings into the show, and so these are real words and thoughts of Janis. And to hear, you know, how she felt and how she thought, I didn't realize how connected I already was to her and her music. And I heard Bobby McGee and things like that, and I didn't know it. Crybaby was on a diaper commercial quite a few years back, and I loved the songs and wasn't very familiar with that. And I heard about, you know, how she died, and kind of like a lot of people are very connected with that kind of aspect of her, but to really get to know her, to come and see this show and to be a part of this show, you really get to know another side of who Janis Joplin was.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I was noticing how this particular piece, you know, written and directed by Randy Johnson, is actually supported by the estate of Janis Joplin.
Absolutely,
yeah. Yeah, so that's really great when you get the estate to support the artistic creation. And then I see the name Todd Gershwin. Is he related to the Gershwin?
He is. I believe he's one of the Gershwin nephews, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, my.
And they have all gotten on board to really take this thing to a broader audience and to the Broadway audience. And they're really doing a really great job of taking this piece and setting it on stage and making sure that it reaches as many people as possible.
Yeah, I was noticing that... maybe you can tell us a little bit about her, that she you know, born January 19th in 1943 in Port Arthur, we already mentioned, and she actually developed a love for music at an early age and sang in her church choir.
And her mother sang quite a bit and would have impromptu singing lessons in her living room and, you know, with her other siblings, and just kind of teach them the basics of singing and things like that. And according to the show and you know, what Randy presents on the stage, that's kind of, you know, where a lot of her music influences came from, was her mother.
Nice. Yeah. So was she supported by her family in her artistic endeavors?
Absolutely. They absolutely supported of what she did and her music, things of that nature.
Yeah. She became well known as a part of an ensemble. Big Brother?
Big Brother and the Holding Company. Yes.
What an interesting name.
Yeah. And she really, a lot of people hear Big Brother and the Holding Company's music and hear that she sings on it, and they call it Janis Joplin's music, which, I mean, you know, she was a powerhouse and a phenomenal singer. But she really did get a really good push in her career from Big Brother and the Holding Company.
Does that precede, or is around the same time when she was in San Francisco and she was active part of the Beat Generation? You know, Jack Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg,
You know that I'm actually not sure as far as the timeline mm-hmm. is concerned. I really don't know.
uh-huh. Yeah. Did she actually meet or know any of her influences, such as Bessie Smith? I think was before her time.
Yes, it was before her time.
But Odetta wasn't.
Well, I know she. As far as Aretha Franklin,
yes.
She said that she would sit in the wings and watch her show any day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was if I'm not mistaken, there was a point where she did sit in the wings and watch an Aretha Franklin show.
Mm-hmm.
And but she talks a lot about how she's connected to her influences and
mm-hmm.
and at one point, what point she became connected to those women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but she doesn't necessarily mention in her diaries actually meeting any of the people that influence her unique way of infusing blues inspired vocals into her music, her rock music.
Mm-hmm. Right now, I can't recall.
Okay.
I cannot recall.
No problem. You can get back to me on that.
I will.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about you. You have appeared in quite a few of my favorite musicals: Ragtime, I Don't Know,
yes.
Spring Awakening, Hairspray. Hairspray is great.
Yeah.
Rockin' Christmas Party sounds fun. And Carolina or Change. Wow.
Carolina Change. Yes. Those are all shows I've done at Zach Theater, and I've also done Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Okay.
One of my favorite roles that I've gotten to play is Celie in The Color Purple.
Oh, seriously? Really?
Mm-hmm. That is one of the roles that
nice.
I learned the most about myself. Because a lot of times you do theater, and it is very therapeutic for the audience,
mm-hmm.
and you get to take them somewhere else, and you get to go somewhere else as well. But that show really, really hit home with me. It was a beautiful, beautiful production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was well done as well. Oh, nice, nice, yeah. And talk about your musical family.
My dad and my mother, David and Tamela Mann, are most known for their work with Kirk Franklin, and
really?
They have done quite a bit of work with Tyler Perry, including Tyler Perry's Meet the Browns.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, my mom has a single, Take Me to the King, which is has been really high on the charts for quite a long time. It's been doing very well. I'm very proud of her.
Mm-hmm.
And also, my mother, because Tamela is technically, lawfully, my stepmother, but she's never stepchild me, and I will never stepmother her.
Okay.
So my mom actually was a big part of making sure I am the performer I am today.
Mm-hmm.
She put me in Texas Girls Choir and made sure I was classically trained and made sure I could read music, and then took me put me in a fine arts high school and made sure I was provided for in that area, and just made sure I was a very well-rounded performer, which has really helped me with this role in particular, because I have to go from singing opera to blues and Nina Simone to Aretha Franklin, and
mm-hmm.
and really making sure that I embody all of those women, and it doesn't sound monotonous, you know?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, you know, if you get up there and you sound the same the whole time, it's like, oh, here's this girl singing the same thing over and over again. You have to differentiate those women,
mm-hmm.
and they have to have different voices and different movements, and my mom was a very instrumental part in making sure that I am a very well-rounded woman and a very well-rounded performer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice, nice. So do you have any music published that people can purchase?
Actually, not right now. I'm actually in the process of working in the studio. This year has been a year of change for me,
mm-hmm.
Really getting outside of the box as far as performing is concerned. So I've done quite a bit of stage work, and musicals and operas and plays and things of that nature. But I'm expanding to actually share a different part of who I am through my own music that I write. And so I'm in the process of recording those things and really getting a good grip on sharing so much of myself, because it's incredibly personal. But I feel like I've listened to other artists pour their hearts out on their albums, and it has helped me so much. And I just hope that the things that I've been through can help someone else. And I'm just going to go ahead and put myself out there and put myself on the line and hope that it helps someone else as much as other people's music has helped me.
Oh, nice, nice. So when can we expect that?
Oh, Lord. There is is not a set date. Since I am out in San Jose right now, I'm not able to go back and really get a grip on those things. So it just depends on the time I can commit to it. But it is a process, and it is moving.
Right. Yeah. The One Night with Janis Joplin opens September 5th, which is, you know, right around Labor Day weekend, and it goes through September 29th, and press night is interestingly September 11th.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about, you know, tomorrow is the anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, August 29th,
mm-hmm.
and in Texas, a lot of people relocated from New Orleans and from the Gulf to Texas, and they
mm-hmm.
stayed, particularly Austin. I know
mm-hmm.
a lot of people that were in New Orleans and they live in Austin. They made Austin their home, and Austin has been very good to Katrina survivors who relocated there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was looking at Janis Joplin's, some of her history, and interestingly enough, in January 1963, that's when she, you know, first moved to San Francisco to check out the emerging music scene. I'm looking at
mm-hmm.
biography.com, hopefully it's correct, and it said that she was hanging out with her friend Chet Helms.
Yep.
And she played some gigs, even a side stage at the 1963 Monterey Folk Festival. Which is so interesting because, you know, today is the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, and that was also 1963.
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted you to talk a little bit about that. And in the same bio that I was reading, it talks about how her voice was unlike any other white female vocalist at the time, and folk icons like Joan Baez, who was at the March on Washington singing,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and Judy Collins, you know, were known for their gentle sounds. But you could talk, I mean, I just threw out a whole lot.
No, it's fine. It's just so wonderful to see how all of these things tie in together,
mm-hmm.
and how music is the underlying thing of all of these historical events.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
There is music that is connected to it, and how powerful music can be to provoke change or to provoke memories of you know, tragic events or triumphant events or just, you know, everyday monotonous activities. Music has always been a part of who we are. It is the very fabric of the human experience, and it's such a universal language, and it's just wonderful. You had all of that, those things to say that happened, you know, a lot of time from each other, mm-hmm. and in different parts of the country and different parts of the world, and music is still connected. That's why I love what I do.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I think you might have already mentioned, you know, the point where you and the character Joplin are going to be on the stage together.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, sort of, are there any particular moments in the play that really move you, whether you're in it or not? And what do you hope audiences will take from this work about Joplin and her life and her legacy, her artistic legacy that she left for us?
Well, one of my favorite moments in the show is Little Girl Blue,
mm-hmm.
and it's with Janis Joplin and the blues singer playing Nina Simone,
mm-hmm.
and Janis Joplin is talking about her interaction with her younger sister and how she was going to draw her sister, and she was squirming, and just, it's a very tender moment to see in Janis Joplin's life how she interacted with her family and how sweet her and her little sister's relationship was. And then you hear Nina Simone, and Nina Simone was such a part of that experience, and she said she keeps hearing Nina Simone in her head as she's having this experience with her sister, and it's not a bunch of flashy lights, it's not a huge rock thing, because, I mean, there are some hard-hitting moments, like Ball and Chain, within this show. It's you have people standing on their feet before the song is even over.
Wow.
But this moment, it brings the audience in, and it draws you into who Janis Joplin was and the things that, you know, the press doesn't necessarily highlight with her and how tender she was and how caring she was. And I think with this particular show, you will walk away knowing Janice as a different person and as a real person of substance, and not, you know, she was an incredible singer and an incredible voice, and you get to really see where this voice came from, really who influenced her and how those influences brought about the music that we all know and love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you mentioned Ball and Chain, I was just looking at that, because that's a big Mama Thornton and when people think about Big Mama Thornton, well, they might not think of her, but they Elvis Presley might come to mind, because he also sang you know, some of her songs, you know, and they became more popular because, you know, he sang them. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, Joplin's contemporaries. I was just reading about, you know, Bob Dylan and Peter, Paul, and Mary and the band, and they were managed by Albert Grossman, who also, you know, when I'm trying to think when, let's see, when the president of Columbia Records, Clive Davis, you know, heard Janis Joplin at Monterey Jazz Festival, you know, he wanted to sign her, and Albert Grossman became her manager. And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, you know, sort of her contemporaries and how she sort of set herself, what she was really different, and if you could, like, explain to people, you know, because you're a musician.
Well, I mean, from a musician aspect, you know, it kind of is more simple than people think. Just be who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very adamant about just being herself.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, didn't want to, you know, in her words, BS people. And she just didn't want to be something that she's not, because it's not organic and it's not real if you try to emulate someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just a one-of-a-kind kind of woman. As far as getting in depth about that, the lady who actually plays Janis Joplin will be able to better explain that. I don't want to give out any wrong information, but from a musician standpoint, it's more simple than people realize. Just be you, because all you bring to the table is you and you know, the culmination of all of your influences and your experiences, and no one else can duplicate that, and you can't duplicate anyone else's.
Mm-hmm.
So just, you know, don't even try. Just do you.
Yeah. Did the politics of the time influence at all her musical compositions?
Sorry. Can you say that one more time? The phone is doing some weird.
Sure. I said, did the politics of the time influence at all her musical her musical selections and compositions?
I would think so, absolutely. That's with any music. You try to write and not necessarily just be relevant, but it is a story of what's happening around you, and it helps people kind of have a timeline of history. If you go through music, and you will see, you know, from Baroque to, you know, 80s rock, you kind of can tell what was going on historically through the music. And I think that absolutely was a part of who she is and how her music came to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when she left the Big Brother band in December 1968, you know, she wasn't with us that much longer. And I was reading that her last album was Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
And it was with Full Tilt Boogie Band.
Mm-hmm.
And from that particular album, Move Over and Mercedes-Benz, a gospel style piece, are two of the well-known pieces on that particular album.
Mm-hmm.
But 1968, you know, was a really horrific year. I think that was the year that Was that the year that Martin Luther King Jr. was killed, or was that the year that Malcolm X was killed?
I believe 68 was the year Martin Luther King Jr.
was
killed.
You know, and the nation was, you know, in mourning for quite some time, you know, after that. And so anyway, I was just wondering if you knew anything about her artistic process, and if you knew any music that sort of you could, like, say, yeah, this, you know, came out of this particular moment because of blah, blah, blah.
Well, I haven't gotten a chance to get that in depth with Janice as much, because I've had to study all the other women. I'm the woman who plays Etta James, Aretha Franklin, Nina Simone, Bessie Smith, and there's also just a blues singer role that comes from, you know, who she is. So I've spent my time studying those women and making sure that I know where they were historically in order to influence Janis Joplin.
Yeah.
So Casey Clanton, who's playing Janis Joplin in this production, would be a better person to ask about that.
Yeah. Well, with Nina Simone, given what today is with regards to the March on Washington, its 50th anniversary, her song, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free,
it's
getting a lot of airplay.
Absolutely.
So tell us about it.
Well, I haven't gotten a chance to do anything because I've been in rehearsals all day. So I haven't gotten a chance to really catch up on things. I kind of get to glance at my cell phone during breaks. But it goes back to what I said. Music, it transcends so much. It's sort of a soundtrack to the times that we are living in, and it's so wonderful that that song is so poignant today with the events and the anniversary of the March on Washington, and I'm elated to hear you know, how everything plays out and how people are celebrating that, and it's so wonderful that is getting so much play today.
Yeah. So what songs will be in your soundtrack, the soundtrack of your life?
Ooh.
It doesn't have to be, you know, it could be one of those long play kind of albums, so you can have like 5 songs as opposed to 8.
Okay. That is quite a loaded question. If Music Be the Food of Love, Sing On. That's one song that really sticks out to me. I don't know. I'm going to have to get back to you on that one.
Okay, no problem.
I'm going to have to get back to you on that one. That's a good question, though. Well done.
Wow. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming out of rehearsal and jumping right on the phone and calling me. That is so kind of you.
No problem.
Yeah, I mean, probably sort of taxing, because, I don't know, how long was your rehearsal?
Rehearsal today wasn't too strenuous, so the most stressful thing, well, it's not stressful, but, you know, I just arrived yesterday into San Jose, so getting my bearings and unpacking and trying to just settle in and really get a chance to see this beautiful city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I hope you get a chance to get out a little bit, because I know sometimes you all have, like, 2 performances. I don't think do you have any days where you have 3?
No. Oh,
that's
no.
Good.
Don't give anyone any ideas.
I won't. Yeah, I'm certainly looking forward to seeing the play and sort of reminiscing on the songs that I didn't know I knew.
Right. That's my favorite part, is going out and listening to audience members. Yeah, remember these songs, remember where they were, remember how they felt when they heard all of this music. And it's less of a play and more of a concert experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people get to stand up and hoop and holler and sit in the, you know, go in the aisles and dance. And
nice.
The more people dance, the more we enjoy ourselves and the more we're able to give back to them. And so just, you know, it's a concert experience. It's such a well-written piece and it flows well, and you get a chance to really understand a different side of Janis Joplin.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Well, thank you again so much, and perhaps we'll have you on again after I've seen the play.
All right. Thank you.
All right. You take good care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
But, man, all of a sudden, somebody threw me in this rock and roll band, right, man? They threw these musicians at me, man, and the sound was coming from behind me. The base charged me. And I knew then and there that that was it. I never wanted to do anything else. And it was better than it had been with any man, you know. Like you were the only man. Yeah, didn't I give you nearly everything that a woman possibly can? Honey, you know I did. Each time I tell myself that I think I've had enough. Subtle.
Thank you.